Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the Calcioland Podcast of the Week. This episode is brought to you by our great friends at Euro Fantasy Game, the home of the best fantasy football games. This week with the Champions League back, I definitely recommend the Champions League competition where you can pick players in Europe's top competition on Euro Fantasy Game. You can also read a lot of great articles from a lot of people that cover Serie A, frequent guests of the podcast like John Solano, Enrico Passarella, and birthday girl Chloe Beresford. So buon compleanno to Chloe. She's been a frequent guest of the podcast who does great work, and you can read her on Euro Fantasy Game as well. So today, it being right after the week match, we're going to do our winners and losers. We had got a lot of questions on Marotta leaving Juve, so we'll get to those as well. And we have a deep dive on Napoli where our great friend Marco D'Onofrio at the end of the podcast. And before we get to all that, just a quick note, we had a couple of tech issues with my iPad, so I'm recording on the old school landline. This is by no means Alex's fault for the audio, but we'll work to bring it back to the standards of the past week for the next one. So, Alex, I know you've been really busy. There was that great Chelsea-Liverpool match, which was right around the time on Juve-Napoli. You've been busy. You started your YouTube channel, which we're all thrilled that you are doing. So today I kind of wanted to talk about something a little bit more recent. Yesterday, Milan's big win against Sassuolo. To say that they needed this win is an understatement. I kind of feel there were two managers that were under a lot of pressure to start the season. That was Di Francesco at Roma, two wins in a row. I think for the time being, his seat is now definitely not scorching hot. And Rino Gattuso, with the win against Sassuolo, definitely buys himself some more time. So I wanted to ask you in general, what's your impression of Gattuso? Do you think Milan should already consider making a change? What's your assessment of that situation, Alex?
You know, David, we say it a lot here on this podcast, but it's important to try and not be a prisoner of the moment. Now, with that said, I am going to be a little bit of a prisoner of the moment with Milan's victory yesterday against Sassuolo. I think some victories and some losses count more than others. Yes, they're always still the same points. However, that was a really good victory for Milan yesterday. Yeah, as you said, maybe Gattuso was a little bit on the hot seat. They go to Sassuolo, who I can't believe I'm saying this, but Sassuolo, a team that is in very good form and not easy to beat, and they win 4-1 on the road. That's huge. That's absolutely huge. If they had lost that game, you're looking at maybe a couple more losses, and Gattuso needs to be gone. Now they get that win. Suso has a great game. Castillejo has a great goal, and all of a sudden, I am way more confident about what Gattuso is doing with Milan. And I've talked about it a lot with Roma. Di Francesco's got a very tough job as a manager to take all of those parts that, in my opinion, don't really fit well together, young players and then old players, but not much in between, and somehow make a great team out of it. I think Gattuso has a very similar problem with Milan. It may not be as much a young versus old problem, but it's a lot of new parts, especially if you're dating back to last year when I feel like they pretty much bought a whole new team, but there's still new parts this year, and it takes a while to figure out who goes with who. It does. But I really think that Gattuso has a vision for Milan, and I think because of yesterday's win, I think he deserves to have more time to put that vision to work. I think that victory should buy him a substantial amount of time. I really do.
So my take on Gattuso, I have to say when he was appointed, I was extremely skeptical. I thought it was another Milan legend who was put out there as kind of a sacrificial lamb, kind of a distraction. Got off to a rough start, then got the team back on track. If you look just at the second half of the season and you project it over the course of the season, they would have finished in third place. So definitely the average you'd like for them to see now. So I felt he definitely deserved the opportunity to start the season, especially because there wasn't, a completely obvious potential replacement. I know there were some Milan fans that were saying, hey, we definitely should have gone all after Sarri. It was a mistake not to. I have a feeling Napoli wouldn't have been as open to breaking the release clause or trying to find the solution around the release clause to see Sarri go to another Serie A team. So I'm not sure that was really realistic. So short of that, I didn't see an obvious person that made sense. You know, we'll get to Conte in a second, in the second part of this segment. So I felt he had done everything to deserve at least a shot to start the season. Definitely, though, the stretch of matches against Cagliari, Atalanta, and Empoli were pretty depressing. It almost felt like we went right back to the beginning of Gattuso's tenure. It didn't seem like he had really transmitted at least his fire and his passion. But this match against Sassuolo, who, you know, had a chance to be in second place with a win in the match, says a lot. So I'm with you. It definitely buys him a good amount of time for me. Now, the person that, you know, Milan fans are clamoring for now is Antonio Conte. So let's talk a little bit more about hypothetically, because I'd be surprised if Conte is going to take over a team mid-season. It's a little bit problematic. It might look reek a little bit of desperation on his end. And the other thing is, if anyone knows anything about Conte, how stubborn he is, he's going to fight tooth and nail to get Chelsea to pay him what he's owed as part of him being sacked. So I don't think it's that realistic this season. But let me ask you, Alex, as someone who knows very familiar with Conte, you've seen the good and the bad. Do you see in a world where Gattuso doesn't work out, Conte is a good fit for Milan?
Oh, I'd love to talk about Antonio Conte. I truly, truly do. Well, David, you once asked me a handful of episodes ago, Conte at Inter or Milan, and I definitely said Milan would be the other fit, but I really just joked. That's just because Bakayoko's there, and Conte clearly, I guess, likes Bakayoko more than others. However, to think about it more seriously, I don't think Conte would be a terrible fit at Milan. I do think there are pieces beyond Bakayoko that he would appreciate, and yes, going to another Serie A top team, or at least top team in the big scheme of things in Milan, must be appealing to Conte. I feel like he would give it 110%. Unlike he did last year. But David, I want to think about something a little bit deeper. You've documented this very well and extensively, that Antonio Conte is not just a back three manager. He has played other formations. However, lately, that is clearly what Antonio Conte really does desire. He made a very good season of it his first year at Chelsea with a back three and, of course, wing backs. And last year, he stuck to it and stuck to it and stuck to it even when it didn't work. So that made me believe that right now, the way Antonio Conte wants to play his football is with a back three, three center backs and two wing backs. Now, looking at Milan's team, that could actually work. They might actually have the people to have a back three or a back five, depending on how you look at it. They, of course, have Romagnoli, Musacchio, and Caldara. And then they do have Ricardo Rodriguez, who has been underwhelming overall, especially when he was acquired from Wolfsburg, but I actually think he very well profiles as a left wing back, David. So maybe there are some pieces on AC Milan's team that Conte could make his own and make their own identity. But overall, I still would not rush to get Antonio Conte. I don't know what type of frame of mind he's in, but I don't think it's the worst fit. I actually think out of the Serie A teams that may be looking for a manager, maybe Milan is one of the better fits for Antonio Conte. That's my take.
So for me, when I look at the landscape in Serie A and I think of Conte, beyond even the squad, I think it's the best situation for him. And there's a couple of reasons why I say that. I mean, you look at Conte's career, when are the times that he strived the best? It's when he had to turn around the tough situation, when it was low expectations, us against the world type of environment. We saw that at Juve when he arrived. We saw that at Chelsea when he arrived. In both cases, when the expectations went up a little bit, that's when things weren't as good. We saw that as well with the Italian national team at the Euro in France, which I thought, I mean, Conte's had a lot of amazing moments as a manager. And I know, you know, there's a lot of recency bias in his last season at Chelsea. I won't try to defend it. But overall, his body of work was tremendous. And what we saw with that Italian national team at the Euro might have been his best. So to me, it's always low expectations, try to turn things around is his wheelhouse. And Milan is right still in that boat, especially if he comes in because Gattuso doesn't work out. It means things have gone worse rather than better. So that situation's a big plus. And the other, look, Milan's, you know, if you judge it by how much Milan has spent on their management team, they brought in Leonardo, brought in Maldini, brought in Gazzidis from Arsenal. They might bring back Umberto Gandini. Like, they're investing a lot. The Elliott Fund's definitely going all in on the team. I think, you know, right now we have to go on the assumption that the Elliott Fund will continue to spend. The only reason they didn't do more on the transfer market were the financial fair play restrictions that they inherited. But they could be working on getting a voluntary agreement with UEFA. And that's part of the reason why they're bringing back, they're trying to bring back Gandini, who has a strong relationship with UEFA, knows those things, gets this as well, could help with that. So you put a situation where Conte arrives hypothetically with a squad that has some talent, has underachieved, and people are looking for a turnaround, and a team that can actually have resources on the transfer market, that's perfect for Conte. Because the way I see it, the other options, say he goes to Roma, I could just imagine the Conte's press conferences after they sell him a big name. I think at Inter, already the bar has been raised for expectations with the squad that they have. Napoli about the same. So I really don't see any other place but Milan. So even beyond the process of elimination, that to me seems like an ideal fit. I doubt it would happen in the season, but let's say things don't work out with Gattuso. I could see them bringing in someone just to get them through the season and then Conte next year. And I think that would be actually a good place for all of them. And Serie A would be better for it, but I'm still rooting for Gattuso, and even better if it never gets to that. So, Alex, before we get to winners and losers, I have to ask you about your YouTube channel. Your videos have been gone absolutely viral. I was yesterday with our friend Matteo Bonetti, and he was like, we're talking a lot about how great your videos are. So tell us a little bit what people can expect on your YouTube channel, and what are your plans for that?
All right. Well, this is unexpected, but thanks. Yeah. So the YouTube channel is called The Byline, and pretty much I am just doing the same thing I've been doing on Twitter. They're going to be short videos, but a little bit longer than the Twitter videos, 4 or 5 minutes. But beyond that, I can't stomach myself for 10 minutes, so I doubt other people can. I'm going to be giving raw, authentic reactions to usually Chelsea, but I think the reason why I'm really excited to do this YouTube channel is I named it The Byline. As you can tell, there's nothing Chelsea-related in that. So when I do see fit, I will venture out and I won't always just talk about Chelsea. If I have to do a random rant on Douglas Costa and get Juventus fans unjustly upset, I'll do that now on my YouTube channel so you can be a little less angry with me on Twitter. But no, in all seriousness, I just want to talk football whenever I see fit. I will try not to have too rigid of a schedule, kind of just do the videos naturally like I've been doing on Twitter. But I would have never even started this YouTube channel without all of the kind support and replies and the retweets from you, David, and everybody else. So it's been very humbling. It's been very exciting. And I really am not going to be doing too much different. You can just kind of find the videos on a different platform now. So yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm excited for things to come. All right, so David, now that we've had my spiel out of the way, we did have a wonderful weekend of Serie A. So as we always do on Monday, trailing a weekend of Serie A, let's get to that winners and losers segment that you mentioned.
Yeah, so exciting weekend in Serie A. A lot of storylines even outside the pitch. So some of them happened just on Saturday, but they almost feel like a week ago. So let's start, of course, with the derby between Roma and Lazio. I'm always a believer that in the derby, the underdog has always kind of a slight leg up because of momentum in a lot of ways goes the opposite of the favorite. So I was in shock to see Roma win. Winners, manager Di Francesco, of course, the win against Frosinone and in the derby. I think that definitely bought him a good amount of time, and the team looks definitely a little bit better. We had Pellegrini come off the bench and score with what else? A back heel. I wonder if that's the only thing they practice on shooting drills for Roma. So Pellegrini, a win. That was his first derby, and a win with a goal for someone that was born in the city of Rome and grew up as a Roma fan. Doesn't get any better than that. So certainly a winner. And then Kolarov, who scored off that free kick. He also had a fracture in his foot that he used for that strike. That was, you know, he got some help from the wall that Lazio did. It was a little bit suspect there. But in any event, Kolarov's a winner as well. Then we had the big match between Juve and Napoli. So Mandzukic with another brace Not surprising. Big game. Mandzukic comes through. Look, you know, I was a little bit down on him. There was a stretch of last season where he seemed like he had lost a step, but he's back at full strength. He's been absolutely instrumental this season for Juve, has really made it work for Ronaldo. So on the pitch, Ronaldo certainly a winner. He didn't score, but I thought that was his best performance as a Juve player, and that's something that Allegri said as well. By now, I think almost everyone's familiar with the storylines off the pitch, the allegations that were brought up from Der Spiegel in Germany on Ronaldo. We'll get into it a little bit more on the segment on Ronaldo, so definitely something to monitor off the pitch. But on the pitch, Ronaldo had a great game. So did Emre Can. I thought he was really solid in that match. So those are the winners from the Juve match. Then Inter had a big win against Cagliari. Two players that scored their first goals for Inter, that's Lautaro Martinez and Politano. You know, Inter's attack is slowly getting on track. Icardi scored his first goals, you know, recently, and now two guys that had never scored got on, opened their accounts at Inter. There's a lot of positive momentum with Inter. You and I got a lot of crap for how much we hyped Inter going into the season, but look, right now they're kind of where we expected them to be. You know, the downside for Inter is they've had a very soft schedule to start the season in Serie A. So let's see how they adapt, but they're definitely on some good momentum now. Then we had Bologna really needed a win in the early match on Sunday. Winners, we had Santander, who scored on a bullet shot, his second goal in Serie A. And Orsolini, Juve-owned winger, had a good performance coming off the bench. He could be an intriguing player. We've talked a lot about the lack of talent on Bologna, and maybe Orsolini can get some more space there. And another winner who's always on this list is Polish Genoa striker Piątek, who now has 8 goals in his first 6 Serie A matches, a record for Genoa. And look, you know, a lot of you guys might not know, I mean, Genoa has a great history with strikers. You know, they had Milito recently. For older fans, they had Skouravi, Aguilera. Like, they have a very strong tradition with strikers, and Piątek has been on an unbelievable tear. So 8 goals in 6 matches. No one had done that in Serie A as a debut in Serie A since Carl Hansen on Atalanta in the 1949-50 season. Piątek's been sensational. Genoa president Preziosi must already be counting the money that he's going to make next summer. He's on record as saying that he won't even consider selling him in January. Let's see if that's true. My guess is that probably will be true. There'll be a much bigger market for him in the summer, but he's been absolutely sensational. Then we had Simone Zaza scoring for Torino, a late winner against Chievo. They needed that win, so he's a winner. Gervinho with another goal, this time against Empoli, but he did leave that match with an injury. Both are winners. And then Milan, of course, we talked about Gattuso at the top. You mentioned Suso was sensational in that match. We also had Frank Kessie with the goal after he had missed the sitter, and Castillejo playing as a false nine scoring. So those are all the winners. Now, I'm not sure we can, you know, I wanted to highlight someone who passed away. I think it was Friday or Saturday. One of the first referees that I really followed as someone who started following calcio in the late 80s, and this was a great Italian referee called Luigi Agnolin, who had a great tradition, refereed a lot of matches. He was, you know, in my lifetime, the first referee that I knew his name and I knew what he was all about. There's not that many referees today that fall in that category, but he was definitely one of the best that I saw. He passed away at the end of the age of 75. So condolences to the family. Wanted to give him a shout out. So on the losers of the week. So let's go back to that Juve-Napoli match. Bonucci, who, you know, is very good at passing, but another Juve goal that he's responsible for, I think almost all the goals in Serie A he had something to do with. So we need to look at that. So I put him as a loser for the week. Mario Rui with the red card. Look, I think Mario Rui has actually been much better this season than last, but he is one of the dirtiest players in Serie A. Our friend Adam Digby tweeted multiple times that he's low-key the dirtiest player in Serie A, and maybe it's no longer low-key. Maybe he just is, but he has been playing well. But that red card took away any chance Napoli of a comeback. Also, Hamsik continues to struggle in the midfield. I'm not trying to take a victory lap here, but when I look at all the other options that Ancelotti has, I just wouldn't start him right now for the time being. Other losers, Lazio goalkeeper Strakosha showed his limitations in this match. Like, look, he has great reflexes, a fantastic shot stopper, but other parts of the game, he's a little bit raw, needs to improve. I also have to say that I was really, really disappointed in Milinkovic-Savic's performance in the derby. I thought after scoring his first goal, maybe he'd get back on track. That was just a really bad performance. Now, I don't know if he's gotten a little bit arrogant. Maybe our appreciation society made him a little bit too full of himself. On the bright side for him, his extension got announced today. With Lazio, he deserved it off the performances of last year, but he's got to get back on track. I'm not in the camp that Lazio did a big mistake not selling him. I think it's way too soon. I think the comparisons to Belotti aren't fair. I compare it maybe a little bit more to when Pogba inherited the number 10 at Juve and struggled for a while to start the season, and then ultimately finished really strong, and Juve broke the transfer record fee with his sale. So I think it's more comparable to that, but he has to get back on track. Other losers, Fiorentina did get a win against Atalanta, but the way the VAR wasn't used in that match was pretty suspicious. If you want to be a conspiracy theorist, Fiorentina maybe got payback for all their complaining for the VAR in the match against Inter, that it wasn't used, and maybe they got some help there. We love Chiesa on this podcast. That dive, though, was maybe not the best representation of what he's all about. So hopefully this is a learning lesson for him. Hopefully he doesn't feel rewarded for that and continues to do it. Now, Atalanta, they didn't deserve to lose that match, but they should be very concerned. Right now, Atalanta is just 1 point over the last spot for relegation. They need to get back on track. They just do not look like the same team. So I still have them as losers for this week. And then three teams that are in trouble in the race to avoid relegation. We had Bologna and Parma with big wins, but Frosinone, Chievo, and Udinese had some tough losses. So they're starting to dig themselves a pretty big hole for the season. So those are our winners and losers. So for the questions part of the podcast, almost all the questions that we got were on Marotta leaving Juve. So we're going to focus on this today. On Thursday, we'll do the questions on the other stuff. We also got some good ones on pop culture journalism. So as always, if you want to send questions for the podcast, then we love them because we want to do the show you want to hear. Just tweet with the CalcioLand hashtag either at me or at CalcioLand or even at Alex, but just make sure you use the CalcioLand hashtag. So what questions did we get on Marotta, Alex?
All right, David. So the first one was, what was your initial reaction when you heard Marotta was leaving?
So I have to say I wasn't completely shocked. I was surprised, but not totally shocked. So my first reaction when I heard this, and this came out right after Juve defeated Napoli, was that maybe Marotta was going to go and become the next president of the Italian Federation. Right now, he keeps denying that he's a contender for that. I think that would be a great spot for him. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I know people see it as a way for Juve to have even more influence, but I think Marotta's such a great administrator and manager that that would be the spot for him. So I wasn't shocked, but I was surprised that that doesn't look to be his expected destination. So let's see what happens. I think the timing, too, was a little bit odd. The fact that he, assuming what he's saying is true about the Federation, that he would be let go kind of in the middle of the season is a little bit rough. There are some reasons for why that came out this way. I know there were a lot of conspiracy theories, which we'll get to with another question, but long and short of it, he announced this because today on Monday when we're recording, Juve had to post their list of people on the next board of directors because they're a publicly traded company, and Marotta knew that his name wasn't on the list, so he kind of wanted to anticipate everyone. So that was the reason for the timing, but again, you know, they could have announced this at the beginning of the season and maybe give him a chance to maybe sign up with another club. So I wasn't shocked, but I was surprised by where he's not going and the timing of it.
All right. The next one is, David, What were some of Morata's biggest accomplishments at Juve?
So I'll tell you this, you know, I started my career, and I put this in air quotes, in football, you know, writing a lot about Juve on the site JuveFC.com. And I feel like, you know, my whole career in the game was really around Morata's reign. There's probably no person I've written more about over the years than him. So I feel like I'm very familiar with him. And look, long and short of it, when you're a senior manager, and he was a executive administrator, almost like the CEO at Juve, to me, the fairest way to judge a manager that high up in an organization is ask yourself, is he leaving the organization in better shape than he found it? I think there is, he could be the biggest Marotta hater. There's no doubt he's leaving Juve in much better shape. Now, look, it was a team effort. He, and we'll get into what his role actually was. Juve has a great president in Agnelli. Juve has a superb sporting director in Paratici, but it was Marotta who brought Paratici with him at Juve. And look at Juve's revenues, how they've grown over the years. He was more of the finance guy. He played a huge role in that. So I think Marotta's done an outstanding job at Juve. When I think of, you know, what are some of his biggest accomplishments, you look at, beside the finances, like the caliber of players that Juve was able to attract. I wrote on The Athletic that, look, you know, the reason Juve could even afford Ronaldo was all the steps Marotta took over the years and how cautious he was. And maybe that's one of the reasons why he left, is Juve doesn't want to be as cautious. But he got mocked for all these loans with option to buy deals that helped Juve spread out payments on players. And that allowed them to just keep building the revenues so the day could come that they could afford Ronaldo, and it happened in increments. Like, I think the fact that they were able to sign Pogba on essentially a free transfer, just paying a posting fee, turning around and selling him for the highest transfer fee ever at the time, that's a huge accomplishment. That allowed them to bring in Higuain, and then Higuain turned into Ronaldo later on. So it was a gradual approach. What I really appreciate about what Juve's done, it wasn't that some rich owner just came in and they started spending like a drunken sailor. Like, they earned it getting to that level. So definitely a great administrator. I think definitely one of the best. Very different than some of the guys we saw previously at Juve. I always felt the comparison to Moggi weren't that fair, because Moggi didn't handle so much the finance, was more involved with the players. His role was a little bit more like Paratici's than Marotta. So I think he did an outstanding job. The long and short of it, Juve and all their fans should be very grateful to him.
Very well said. All right, so David, the next question, this is very interesting. Could the recent allegations on CR7 have anything to do with Marotta leaving?
So I'd be absolutely floored and shocked if there was any connection between the two. Like, I talked about the timing, why Marotta announced this now. It's because today, this morning, Italy time, they announced who was on the list of board of directors. It sounds like he knew for a while. He said, like, in the middle of September, Agnelli told them they were going a different direction. So I don't buy at all that there's a connection between the two. I've read some people also say, you know, Marotta was instrumental in the CR7 deal. He should have done his due diligence. He should have known that there were these allegations and rumor out there. But look, Paratici was the guy, the sporting director, that was front and center on this deal. Like, everyone at Juve, all the interviews, Nedved, Marotta, they all said that it was Paratici running point on that deal. And as a matter of fact, when Ronaldo did his introductory press conference at Juve, was Paratici sitting next to him. And I think Juve really wanted to put him as the face of that deal. So, no, I don't buy at all that it's because of that. I think, you know, there are some other reasons, though. I think, for one, you just look at the age. Marotta, 61. The rest of the board on Juve, I feel like the new triumvirate's going to be Andrea Agnelli, Pavel Nedved, and Paratici. They're all in their 40s. They're considerably younger. Marotta's great, but he has a very domestic outlook. He's been very embedded with Serie A, worked at Sampdoria for years, very familiar with the Italian market. I'm not sure how much of an international mentality Juve has. So I think between the age, the rest of the management team being younger and trying to get more of a European approach, I really think that that's ultimately the reason why they're going. I think Marotta was very cautious for years, And look, someone tweeted me too, because a while back, you know, when we were talking about the will of the players and big name players wanting to leave Juve, and I was saying, you know, maybe Juve needs to toughen up and be like Bayern Munich and PSG. And I always use the analogy from The Godfather that sometimes you need a wartime consigliere, not a peacetime consigliere, and maybe Marotta's more of a peacetime consigliere. So maybe there's a little bit of that as well, but I think it's more like a European dimension. I think Juve wants to, I think for the time, I doubt there's going to be someone like Zidane that comes in. I think they just want a younger management team and start looking to the future. I think Juve has, you know, the next phase for them is in the mid-2020s when, you know, we might have a different version of the Champions League. I think Juve is really trying to set up their management team with that in mind.
All right, David, how about this? How do you think Juve will replace Morata? Pretty simple.
Yeah, so if you go, you know, if you go by the public quotes, which, you know, in general, I would say be very careful. But in this case, it's a little different because Juve is a publicly traded company and their stock price, obviously, if you know anything about stocks, when a senior member of a company leaves, there are impacts. I think for the most part, I do buy that everyone at Juve is being pretty truthful. You know, right now, it really sounds like they're going to make some changes and Nedved and Paratic and Andrea Agnelli are going to have more responsibilities, maybe take over some of the stuff that Marotta used to do. Interestingly, the other director that's leaving, I forget his name, he was an older guy like Marotta. He handled more the revenues and the finances. He's leaving. So it looks they're taking kind of a different approach there. I know a lot of people were saying, oh, if you've announced that Marotta's leaving, they must know who the replacement is. And I didn't buy that at all because I knew that, again, this announcement on the board of directors was coming. Zidane, to me, if he comes back to Juve, it makes much more sense as an eventual replacement for Allegri as a manager. I'm not sure he's interested in being like an executive administrator. So for the time being, it seems they're going to go in-house. So that's what I think is going to happen. You know, the board is in October, in the middle of October. So let's see what comes out there. But again, I think Juve has to be more truthful for these sorts of announcements than, say, when they're talking about transfers, just because they are publicly traded.
All right, David. Well, this is going to round out this segment. What qualities would Morata bring a club interested in hiring him?
So, not surprisingly, the minute this news came out, I had a ton of Manchester United fans tweet me, is he coming to us? I had some Roma fans tweet me, is he coming to us? Some Milan fans, is he coming here? So, here's the thing about Morata, and I see all these tweets on Juve signed Pirlo, Pogba, Vidal, Bonucci, Tevez under Marotta. But to be fair, those are much more Paratici, the sporting director. Like Juve's, you know, has some pretty clear responsibilities within their management team. And Marotta's much more of the finance guy and Paratici is the sporting director scout. So if you're a team that from your director, you want someone that's great at finding players, discovering talents, great at negotiations with other clubs, I think Paratici is more up your alley. Now, Marotta is great with figuring out the finances of this. So if they want a player, he'll figure out how to make it fit on Juve's balance sheet in a smart way so that it doesn't hurt the club. So if you're looking for someone like that, I think he's a great administrator. But if you're looking for straight-up sporting director to find players, that he's really not your guy, especially at this stage of his career. I think the best description of the way Marotta Paratici operated was in Conte's book. And it was a description of, you know, when Conte arrived at Juve, he wanted to be very involved with, you know, the players that would be on the team. So he used to go watch matches with Paratici, the sporting director, and they'd scout and they'd say, okay, how does this player fit into our team? And then they'd call Marotta and say, okay, you know, well, we're on the same page. We want you to go buy this player. And then Marotta would go do it. So if your club is looking for someone like that, great. If you want the guy that discovers the players, you have to hope that Juve is going to let Paratici go, but I doubt they will. I mean, they've gone over and over to say that Paratici is staying and he'll have more responsibilities. So we'll discuss a little bit more about Marotta. I'm going to write at least one more article about him since I've written so much about him over the years. So I want to wish him the best. I think he's done an outstanding job for Juve. I also want, before we get to the interview part of the segment with our friend Marco Cubani, I want to thank our listeners. Your support is tremendous. Please keep sending us questions for Thursday's podcast. We really appreciate people that leave us reviews, that tweet about our podcast to their Twitter followers. We rely on you as our marketing department to help us grow.
So this week for the interview parts of the podcast, we kind of want to piggyback on the big match between Juve and Napoli and circle back on those two teams. We haven't covered them in depth recently, so this game is the springboard for that. So we're going to start with Napoli, and I'm thrilled to be joined by a great friend of the show, Marco D'Onofrio. You guys know him on Twitter as @Cubani7. He's been on the podcast many times to help us take a deep dive on Napoli. You guys can hear him on his own podcast and radio show, Stadio Serie A, which has been around forever for good reason, where they cover all the league. It's a fun podcast where you get a lot of information on Serie A, and as well as the excellent Sempre SSC Napoli podcast, the first English language podcast. So on top of podcasting, you also can read Marco on Football Italia as well as Soccer 360 Mag. So Marco, it's great to have you back. Welcome back to Calcioland. How you doing, buddy?
Thank you for having me back on. It's a pleasure. And yesterday was International Podcast Day. So happy International Podcast Day to both you and Alex for everything you guys have done and everything that Calcioland has done since its inception.
Very kind of you. Thank you so much. So, Marco, we were chatting before we started recording. You know, it almost like so much has been going on in Serie A and the world in general that the game on Saturday almost feels like it took place a month ago. So let's go back to that. I thought Napoli played pretty well. They took an early lead. It definitely felt very different than what we had seen from the Sarri days. So let me ask you, do you think the final result of the match, which was 3-1, was a fair representation of what we saw on the pitch?
Yeah, it was definitely a frustrating result from a Napoli perspective. But you know what? At the end of the day, it probably was a fair result. I think Napoli controlled large spells of the game, especially the opening 20 minutes. And then after Rui was sent off, it seemed like Napoli was going to find the equalizer. But credit Juventus for an excellent game, well played. And you know what? We saw why Cristiano Ronaldo is the best player on the planet, and his influence really shone through, and Napoli just couldn't handle him. And I think at the end of the day, that was the biggest difference between the two sides.
Yep, I agree with that. I think especially with this current Juve with Ronaldo, there's really no margin of error. If you're the opponent, you have to have a perfect game and then some. And yeah, I'm with that description of the match. So let's take a step back. As I hinted, to me, this felt like a pretty different Napoli in this match. The team has definitely changed quite a bit from what we saw from Sarri. So you cover them even more closely than I do. So tell me a little bit, what's your impression of Ancelotti? What's impressed you the most of what he's brought to the team so far?
You know what? I've loved everything Ancelotti's done. And I know Napoli's lost two games so far, and that wasn't the case under Sarri. I mean, last year, Napoli didn't lose until that Higuain goal at the San Paolo in December. But the biggest difference is Ancelotti's ability to rotate the squad. Leading up to that match against Juventus, the midweek game against Parma, he rotated 9 players from the team that started against Torino. So there's 20 different starters in 2 matches. That never would have been the case under Sarri. And although you're still seeing some hiccups with it and some struggles in the what Napoli needs, and that's what this club is going to help this club go forward, especially towards the end of the season, because under Sarri, we consistently saw Napoli fade away as the season went on. And hopefully that won't be the case under Ancelotti. So that he deserves a ton of credit, and his willingness to just play newer players. Malcoué was incredible in that game against Parma. We saw him come in after Rui was sent off, and his ability to just come into the squad and make a difference. And Ancelotti, that's what he's done. He's given this club a mentality and a belief in themselves that I don't think was there under Sarri, unfortunately.
I agree with that. So now let's talk about one player that Ancelotti's been very focused on. So during the summer, there was a lot of rumors that Hamsik could head to China. You know, I get the impression that had a really big offer arrived to De Laurentiis, they probably would have let him go. But then Ancelotti also tried to convince him to stay, try to put him in a different role. You know, this isn't so much an indictment on Hamsik as much as it is, you know, credit to the other midfielders that Napoli have. I think they have the best midfield in Serie A, top to bottom, incredibly deep. So tell me a little bit on how you see the situation with Hamsik. Do you still see him as someone that should be a full-time starter? Is he really getting by on his name recognition? Do you think maybe they should go in another direction? And ultimately, what role would you like to see him have on the team this season?
I think you're bang on. I think if an offer had arrived that was big enough for the club to accept, I think Hamsik would be overseas right now, and that just never came in. Although he was given a pretty big contract, money was never coming to Napoli, or at least the money that De Laurentiis envisioned coming in, and that's why ultimately he didn't go. But I do still think he's going to be useful for this club, and I like the fact that Ancelotti's converted him into a deep line playmaker, just like he did with Pirlo years ago. And for Hamsik, that's probably the only way he's going to be able to extend his career. And I think it's also given him some more motivation, or some new motivation and inspiration, to keep on going. Because, listen, when you've been with Napoli as long as he has, and you've come so close to a Scudetto but never got it done, it can be tiring and it can be frustrating. And especially after he gave everything he did last year, and to come up just short, I can see why he was looking for something different. And I think with Ancelotti, he will be rejuvenated. In terms of his place as a regular starter, I think you're still going to see that happening, at least until Ruiz and Fabian Ruiz comes more into the team and starts becoming more comfortable with the squad, because I think eventually he will replace Hamsik in that role. But with, like I said, with this squad, what makes it so different is that you almost don't know who's going to start week in, week out, game in, game out. And that's something that Napoli's never had before. And I think that's what makes this team so exciting, because whether it was Benitez, whether it was Sarri, whether it was Mazzarri before that, Napoli traditionally had their typical 11 that they went game in, game out with. And that's the difference with Ancelotti. So yes, he might not be starting every game like we used to see, but he's also playing 90 minutes sometimes, right? That was never the case with Sarri. Sarri, he started every game, but he was often substituted. And now we're seeing him play a full 90 minutes. And I don't think he can expect to play every game. I don't think anybody can expect to play every game. And yeah, he's got a big name, and yeah, he's still the captain of this club. But I think slowly, as the season and as the Ancelotti era progresses, we're going to start seeing him more of a diminished role. But that's not to say he's still not important for this club, because he really, really is.
So one player that has certainly benefited a ton from Ancelotti's arrival is Lorenzo Insigne. You know, from the way I see it, I thought, you know, on the Sarri, when we saw those great triangles on the left wing with him, Ghoulam, and Hamsik, that was really devastating. You know, maybe after a while it was predictable, but I felt like the typical Napoli action with those triangles, left-hand side, and then Insigne with a cross to the four post with Callejon waiting to score. I felt, you know, maybe that's going to be peak Insigne, but this season it's been really something else, playing as a second striker in a different formation. So give me your take on that. How surprised have you been by his performances? And we've seen Ancelotti rotate Mertens and Milik with him. Which ones of the two would you like to see play with Insigne more moving forward?
Yeah, it's interesting to see Insigne play in a more central role. And so far, so good. And the 4-4-2 that Ancelotti's playing is working. And it's nice to see. I think we're going to continue to see him progress. And it's interesting, because a lot of people will call Insigne overrated because of his performances with the national team. But if he's doing what he's supposed to do and playing in the right role with the right squad, we see how lethal and how capable he is of being detrimental to opposing defenses. So he's really, really important for this attack. And whether it's Mertens with him up top or whether it's Milik, it makes a big difference as well. I think him and Mertens have that speed. They have that connection, that they know where each other are and at the pitch at all times. And that just comes from the chemistry they built with under Sarri. So I see the benefit of that. But I also know how important it is to have size. And that's what Milik gives this club that they don't have emergencies on the pitch. And that's another element that this club really, really needs to utilize. And what people need to understand as well is because a lot of people were saying ahead of that Juve game, well, how is Milik not playing? It doesn't make sense to start two smaller forwards. But Napoli also has a crucial game against Liverpool coming up on Wednesday in the Champions League. So you can't continue to roll out the same center forward game in, game out. And I can guarantee you that Milik will start on Wednesday. I'm just actually wondering if it'll be Insigne or Mertens playing with him. But we know that Insigne has become really, really pivotal to this Ancelotti squad. And he's one of the two players, him and Koulibaly, were the only two players that played against Torino and Parma. And then they also got the start against Juve on the weekend. So we know how crucial he is for this club going forward. And it'll be interesting to see how the season progresses and how he does, but he's going to shatter his own goal record. I mean, he's already got 5 goals this season, and I think that's just going to continue.
So one reason for optimism for Napoli fans is there are some players, two that we haven't seen at all, and that's goalkeeper Mere, who Napoli invested a lot of money in, a very promising keeper. So far, his problem is being able to stay healthy. And then Ghoulam, of course, who, you know, before he got hurt, I thought was without a doubt the best left back in Serie A. So those two guys have yet to play. We talked a little bit about Fabian Ruiz, who's slowly being integrated, but definitely a player with a big potential. Napoli, especially for their standard, invested a lot in him. So do you see these three players potentially bringing a pretty big margin for improvement?
Absolutely, and especially with Murray. I mean, he's very inexperienced, and we're not entirely sure what you're going to get out of him. But the biggest area of concern right now for this Napoli club has to be in between the pipes, right, in goal. Neither Karnišić or Ospina has looked very convincing so far early season, and we're just hoping that Murray can be that void, to help fill that void that they desperately need for stability in that goal. And again, that's a big difference between Napoli and Juventus too, because Juventus, yeah, they lost Buffon, but they had Chesney ready to go, and they signed Pedri, and so they were locked and loaded. And Napoli isn't necessarily. And we saw them sign Ospina in panic when Karnišić wasn't able to live up to the billing. So we'll see. I think that's definitely the biggest area that can be improved. Ghoulam, people forget that he's even on this club or what he was able to do before that injury last year. And I think ultimately that may be the biggest reason Napoli couldn't topple Juventus for the Scudetto last season, because Ghoulam's injury. Yeah, Rui came in and filled the void, but we also see what he's lacking, and he can be reckless, and we saw that this weekend. But what I will say this season is Napoli has a lot more depth at the fullback position. And again, Malcue, we've only seen him play 2 games. I mean, 1.5, because he only came in off the bench against Juventus, but probably Napoli's best player on the pitch against Parma. And we saw what he's capable of. We also know that Luperto's coming up through the system, and he's gotten some time under Ancelotti. So I think for the first time in a long time, Napoli actually have some depth at fullbacks. So it's nice to see. I mean, if Ghoulam can come back fully healthy and become the player that we're used to seeing be, then absolutely he adds something to this club. But I think still the biggest area that this team can improve on is in net. And in terms of Ruiz, I think you hit the nail on the head earlier when you mentioned how deep Napoli's midfield is. And as great as Fabian Ruiz is to have, and as important as he will be to this club going forward, this club is pretty stacked in the midfield. So I don't know how much more room for improvement there will be there. But definitely as the season goes on and as the years go by, we'll see him become more and more crucial to this team.
So you mentioned definitely Napoli has more depth, they're less predictable. You know, in a lot of ways, this bodes well for long term for the season. But the way I see it, Napoli, you know, I'm not even sure they can get to 91 points again, which was pretty insane. I mean, granted, they punted the other competitions to get there. But I think this Juve is, I'm going to take away, that is better than what we saw last year. So the way I see it, I mean, let me know if you agree. Do you think for Napoli, it's like really important to prioritize trying to win a title at being, you know, Europa League or Coppa Italia, something like that? I mean, we're only 7 games in, so I don't want to, you know, take away the Scudetto. But give me a little bit your thoughts on when you look at the potential outcome for the season. I think on the bright side for Napoli, there isn't too much worry about finishing in the top 4. I think the only other team that can really potentially challenge them for like Second place is Inter. I see Roma, you know, has taken a pretty big step back to last season. Milan doesn't look ready for the Champions League. So give me kind of your take on where, what do you think Napoli's objective should be this season?
I think you're right. I mean, listen, we're seven games in and Juventus already have a 6-point lead. The Scudetto is far from over. I can't see Napoli bridging that gap. I mean, again, we've still got the vast majority of the season to play, but Juventus, the depth they have, the squad they have, and I mean, even early season, we haven't seen them look their greatest, but they're still able to get results. And that wasn't always the case with them. So I think Serie A this year might be a little bit too much to aim for, but I also had Napoli finishing third coming into the season. I thought Inter was going to topple them in that second place, and we'll see what ends up happening because now they look to be fully going, and they've got their self-esteem back since that Tottenham win. I believe it's been 4 wins in a row for them. So I think Napoli will be battling it out for second. But you're right. The difference this season is Ancelotti's made it clear that he's not going to be punting the Champions League or the Coppa Italia. He's looking to win a trophy. Whether Napoli can get out of that Champions League group will be, I mean, Wednesday's game is going to be absolutely crucial. That tie against Belgrade was really detrimental. I know it's not an easy place to go to, but they needed 3 points from that, knowing that you have PSG and Liverpool coming up. But again, even if they are eliminated from the Champions League, I think they'll finish third and go for the Europa League. And if they get into the Europa League, or if they, you know, drop out of the Champions League and are playing in Europa League knockout stage, I don't see any reason why they can't win this tournament, especially under an experienced veteran like Ancelotti. Coppa Italia, I think, is also reasonable to aim for, but I think Napoli wants some European success, and I think that's one of the big reasons that De Laurentiis wanted to bring Ancelotti in. He saw what Roma did last year, and he said, why can't that be us? I don't think ultimately Napoli will be in danger of dropping out of the top four, just because, like you said, I don't think Rome was the team that they were a year ago. And I think Milan still has a little ways to go before they can become that club. But you never know. And Napoli needs to be consistent. Their schedule does get easier, I will say that. So they've had the hardest start to Serie A, bar none. I mean, they played, you know, Fiorentina, Lazio, Milan, now Juve. So, and they visited Sampdoria, which it's never easy to go over there in Genoa. So, I mean, we'll see how the season plays out, but I do think there's an opportunity for silverware somewhere.
Yeah, and again, I know I had all these questions and I didn't want to lead you on too much, but again, you know, it's still early, but I think that would be a good objective if things go south in the Champions League. To me, the opportunity is right there. So, Marco, I can't thank you enough for joining us. I look forward to chatting with you again during the season on Napoli. Everyone check out Marco's work on Stadio Serie A. They do brilliant work there. A lot of the guests that you hear on Cultureland are on that as well. The Sempre Napoli podcast is a great place if you want to stay up to date with Napoli. So, Marco, thank you so much for joining us. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
No, the pleasure is all mine, David. And in all honesty, until it's either reported from you or DiMarzio, I'm not believing any rumors or news or anything when it comes to Calcio. So keep up with the good, accurate work. It's really, really appreciated. And now it's, buddy, those Instagram videos are awesome. Sorry, those Twitter videos are awesome. So you keep up the good work too, my friend. And enjoy Jorginho. We miss him.